Alice's Adventures in Wonderland by Lewis Carroll. Earlier recordings are available on KRBD's website if you are newly joining us. "There's nothing to what I could say if I choose," Duchess replied in a pleased tone. "Pray don't trouble yourself to say it any longer than that," said Alice. "Oh, don't talk about trouble," said the Duchess. "I make you a present of everything I've said as yet." A cheap sort of present, thought Alice. I'm glad they don't give birthday presents like that. But she did not venture to say it out loud. "Thinking again," the Duchess asked with another dig of her sharp little chin. "I've a right to think," said Alice sharply, for she was beginning to feel a little worried. "Just about as much right," said the Duchess, "as pigs have to fly and the m—" But here, to Alice's great surprise, the Duchess's voice died away, even in the middle of her favorite word, moral, and the arm that was linked into hers began to tremble. Alice looked up, and there stood the Queen in front of them, with her arms folded, frowning like a thunderstorm. "A fine day, Your Majesty," the Duchess began in a low, weak voice. "Now, I give you fair warning," shouted the Queen, stamping on the ground as she spoke. "Either you or your head must be off, and that in about half no time. Take your choice." The Duchess took her choice and was gone in a moment. "Let's go on with the game," the Queen said to Alice, and Alice was too much frightened to say a word, but slowly followed her back to the croquet ground. The other guests had taken advantage of the Queen's absence and were resting in the shade. However, the moment they saw her, they hurried back to the game, the Queen merely remarking that a moment's delay would cost them their lives. All the time they were playing, the Queen never left off quarreling with the other players and shouting, "Off with his head," or "Off with her head." Those whom she sentenced were taken into custody by the soldiers, who, of course, had to leave off being arches to do this, so that by the end of a half an hour or so, there were no arches left, and all the players, except the king, the queen, and Alice, were in custody and under sentence of execution. Then the queen left off, quite out of breath, and said to Alice, "Have you seen the mock turtle yet?" "No," said Alice. "I don't even know what a mock turtle is." "It's the thing mock turtle soup is made from," says the queen. "I never saw one or heard of one," said Alice. "Come on, then," said the queen, "and he shall tell you his history." As they walked off together, Alice heard the king say in a low voice to the company generally, "You are all pardoned." "Come, that's a good thing," she said to herself, for she had felt quite unhappy at the number of executions the queen had ordered. They very soon came upon Griffin, lying fast asleep in the sun. If you don't know what a griffin is, look at the picture. "Up, lazy thing," said the queen, "and take this young lady to see the mock turtle and to hear his history. I must go back and see after some executions I have ordered." And she walked off, leaving Alice alone with the griffin. Alice did not quite like the look of the creature, but on the whole, she thought it would be quite as safe to stay with it as to go after that savage queen, so she waited. The griffin sat up and rubbed its eyes, then it watched the queen till she was out of sight, then it chuckled. "What fun," said the griffin, half to itself, half to Alice. "What is the fun?" said Alice. "Why, she," said the griffin. "It's all her fancy, that. They never executes nobody, you know. Come on." "Everybody says, come on here," thought Alice as she went slowly after it. "I never was so ordered about in all my life. Never." They had not gone far before they saw the mock turtle in the distance, sitting sad and lonely on the little ledge of rock. And as they came nearer, Alice could hear him sighing as if his heart would break. She pitied him deeply. "What is in his sorrow?" she asked the griffin. And the griffin answered very nearly in the same words as before. "It's all his fancy, that. He hasn't got no sorrow, you know. Come on." So they went up to the mock turtle, who looked at them with large eyes full of tears, but said nothing. "This here young lady," said the griffin, "she wants for you to know your history, she do." "I'll tell it to her," said the mock turtle in a deep, hollow tone. "Sit down, both of you, and don't speak a word till I have finished." So they sat down, and nobody spoke for some minutes. Alice thought to herself, I don't see how he can ever finish if he doesn't begin. But she waited patiently. Once, said the Mock Turtle, at last, with a deep sigh, I was a real turtle. These words were followed by a very long silence, broken only by an occasional exclamation of Hirakar, said the Gryphon, and the constant heavy sobbing of the Mock Turtle. Alice was very nearly getting up and saying, Thank you, sir, for your interesting story, but she could not help thinking there must be more to come. So she sat still and said nothing. When we were little, the Mock Turtle went on at last, more calmly, though still sobbing a little now and then, we went to school in the sea. The master was an old turtle. We used to call him Tortoise. Why did you call him Tortoise if he wasn't one? Asked Alice. We called him Tortoise because he taught us, said the Mock Turtle angrily. Really, you are very dull. You ought to be ashamed of yourself for asking such a simple question, added the Gryphon. And then they both sat silent and looked at poor Alice, who felt ready to sink into the earth. At last the Gryphon said to the Mock Turtle, Drive on, old fellow, don't be all day about it. And he went on in these words. Yes, we went to school in the sea, though you mightn't believe it. I never said I didn't, interrupted Alice. You did, said the Mock Turtle. Hold your tongue, added the Gryphon, before Alice could speak again. The Mock Turtle went on. We had the best of educations. In fact, we went to school every day. I've been to a day school, too, said Alice. You needn't be so proud as all that. With extras? Asked the Mock Turtle, a little anxiously. Yes, said Alice. We learned French and music. And washing? Said Mock Turtle. Certainly not, said Alice indignantly. Ah, then yours wasn't a really good school, said the Mock Turtle in a tone of great relief. Now at ours, they had an end of the bill. French, music, and washing. Extra. You couldn't have wanted it much, said Alice, living at the bottom of the sea. I couldn't afford to learn it, said the Mock Turtle with a sigh. I only took the regular course. What was that? Inquired Alice. Reeling and writhing, of course, to begin with, the Mock Turtle replied, and then the different branches of arithmetic, ambition, distraction, uglification, and derision. I never heard of uglification, Alice ventured to say. What is it? The Gryphon lifted up both its paws in surprise. Never heard of uglification, it exclaimed. You know what to beautify is, I suppose. Yes, said Alice doubtfully. It means to make anything prettier. Well, then, the Gryphon went on, if you don't know what to uglify is, you are a simpleton. Alice did not feel encouraged to ask any more questions about it, so she turned to the Mock Turtle and said, What else had you to learn? Well, there was mystery, the Mock Turtle replied, counting off the subjects on his flappers. Mystery, ancient and modern, with seaography, then drawing. And the drawing master was an old codger eel that used to come once a week. He taught us drawing, stretching, and fainting in coils. What was that like? Said Alice. Well, I can't show it you myself, the Mock Turtle said. I'm too stiff, and the Gryphon never learnt it. Hadn't time, said the Gryphon. I went to the classical master, though. He was an old crab, he was. I never went to him, the Mock Turtle said with a sigh. He taught laughing and grief, they used to say. So he did, said the Gryphon, sighing in his turn, and both creatures hid their faces in their paws. And how many hours a day did you do lessons? Said Alice, in a hurry to change the subject. 10 hours the first day, said the Mock Turtle, 9 the next, and so on. What a curious plan, exclaimed Alice. That's the reason they called lessons, the Gryphon remarked, because they lesson from day to day. This was quite a new idea to Alice, and she thought it over a little before she made her next remark. Then the 11th day must have been a holiday. Of course it was, said the Mock Turtle. And how did you manage on the 12th? Alice went on eagerly. That's enough about lessons, the Gryphon interrupted in a very decided tone. Tell her something about the games now. Chapter 10. The Lobster Quadrille. The Mock Turtle sighed deeply and drew the back of one flipper across his eye. He looked at Alice and tried to speak, but for a minute or two, sobs choked his voice. "Same as if he had a bone in his throat," said the Gryphon, and it set to work him shaking and punching him in the back. At last the Mock Turtle recovered his voice, and with tears running down his cheeks, he went on again. "You may not have lived much under the sea." "I haven't," said Alice, "and perhaps you were never even introduced to a lobster." Alice began to say, "I once tasted," but checked herself hastily and said, "No, never. So you can have no idea what a delightful thing a lobster quadrille is." "No, indeed," said Alice. "What sort of a dance is it?" "Why," said the Gryphon, "you first form into a line along the seashore." "Two lines," cried the Mock Turtle. "Seals, turtles, salmons, and so on. Then when you've cleared all the jellyfish out of the way," "That generally takes some time," interrupted the Gryphon. "You advance twice, each with a lobster as a partner," cried the Gryphon. "Of course," the Mock Turtle said. "Advance twice, set to partners. Change lobsters and retire in the same order," continued the Gryphon. "Then, you know," the Mock Turtle went on, "you throw the lobsters," shouted the Gryphon with a bound into the air, "as far out to sea as you can." "Swim after them," screamed the Gryphon. "Turn a somersault in the sea," cried the Mock Turtle, capering wildly about. "Change lobsters again," yelled the Gryphon at the top of its voice. "Back to land again, and that's all the first figure," said the Mock Turtle, suddenly dropping his voice. And the two creatures, who had been jumping about like mad things all this time, sat down again very sadly and quietly and looked at Alice. "It must be a very pretty dance," said Alice timidly. "Would you like to see a little of it?" said the Mock Turtle. "Very much indeed," said Alice. "Come, let's try the first figure," said the Mock Turtle to the Gryphon. "We can do without lobsters, you know. Which shall sing?" "Oh, you sing," said the Gryphon. "I've forgotten the words." So they began solemnly dancing round and round, Alice every now and then treading on her toes when they passed too close and waving their forepaws to mark the time, while the Mock Turtle sang this very slowly and sadly. "Will you walk a little faster with a witting to a snail? There's a porpoise close behind us, and he's treading on my tail. See how eagerly the lobsters and the turtles all advance? They are waiting on the shingle. Will you come and join the dance? Will you, won't you, will you, won't you, will you join the dance? Will you, won't you, will you, won't you, won't you join the dance? You can really have no notion how delightful it will be when they take us up and throw us with the lobsters out to sea." But the snail replied, "Too far, too far," and gave a look askance. Said he thanked the whiting kindly, but he would not join the dance. Would not, could not, would not, could not, would not join the dance. Would not, could not, would not, could not, could not join the dance. "What matters is how far we go," his scaly friend replied. "There's another shore, you know, upon the other side. The further off from England than there is to France, then turn not pale, beloved snail, but come and join the dance. Will you, won't you, will you, won't you, will you join the dance? Will you, won't you, will you, won't you, won't you join the dance?" "Thank you. It's a very interesting dance to watch," said Alice, feeling very glad that it was over at last. "And I do so like the curious song about the witting." "Oh, as to the witting," said the Mock Turtle, you've seen them, of course." "Yes," said Alice, "I've often seen them at din—" She checked herself hastily. "I don't know what din may be," said the Mock Turtle, "but if you've seen them so often, of course you know what they are like." "I believe so," Alice replied thoughtfully. "They have their tails and their mouths, and they're all over crumbs." "You're wrong about the crumbs," said the Mock Turtle. "Crumbs would all wash off in the sea. But they have their tails and their mouths, and the reason is—" Here the Mock Turtle yawned and shut his eyes. "Tell her about the reason and all that," he said to the Gryphon. "The reason is," said the Gryphon, "but they would go with the lobsters to the dance, so they got thrown out to sea, so they had to fall a long way. So they got their tails fast in their mouths, so they couldn't get them out again. That's all." "Thank you," said Alice. "It is very interesting. I never knew so much about witting before." "I can tell you more than that, if you like," said the Gryphon. "Do you know why it's called a witting?" "I never thought about it," said Alice. "Why?" "It does the boots and the shoes," the Gryphon replied solemnly. Alice was thoroughly puzzled. "Does the boots and shoes?" she repeated in a wondering tone. "Why, what are your shoes done with?" said the Gryphon. "I mean, what makes them so shiny?" Alice looked down at them and considered a little before she gave her answer. "They're done with blacking, I believe." Boots and shoes under the sea, the Gryphon went on in a deep voice, are done with whiting. Now you know. And what are they made of? Alice said in a tone of great curiosity. Soles and eels, of course, the Gryphon replied rather impatiently. Any shrimp could have told you that. If I'd been the whiting, said Alice, whose thoughts were still running on the song, I'd have said to the porpoise, keep back, please. We don't want you with us. They were obliged to have him with them, the Mock Turtle said. No wise fish would go anywhere without a porpoise. Wouldn't it really? Said Alice in a tone of great surprise. Of course not, said the Mock Turtle. Why, if a fish came to me and told me he was going a journey, I should say, with what porpoise? Don't you mean purpose? Said Alice. I mean what I say, the Mock Turtle replied in an offended tone. And the Gryphon added, come, let's hear some of your adventures. I could tell you my adventures, beginning from this morning, said Alice, a little timidly, but it's no use going back to yesterday, because I was a different person then. Explain all that, said the Mock Turtle. No, no, the adventures first, said the Gryphon in an impatient tone. Explanations take such a dreadful time. So Alice began telling them her adventures from the time she first saw the white rabbit. She was a little nervous about it just at first. The two creatures got so close to her, one on each side, and opened their eyes and mouth so very wide. But she gained courage as she went on. Her listeners were perfectly quiet till she got to the part about her repeating, "You are old, Father William," to the caterpillar, and the words all coming different. And then the Mock Turtle drew a long breath and said, "That's very curious." "It's all about as curious as it can be," said the Gryphon. "It all came different," the Mock Turtle repeated thoughtfully. "I should like to hear her try and repeat something now. Tell her to begin." He looked at the Gryphon as if he thought it had some kind of authority over Alice. "Stand up and repeat. 'Tis the voice of the sluggard," said the Gryphon. How the creature ordered one about and make one repeat lessons, thought Alice. I might just as well be at school at once. However, she got up and began to repeat it, but her head was so full of the lobster quadrille that she hardly knew what she was saying, and the words came very queer indeed. "'Tis the voice of the lobster," I heard him declare. "You have baked me too brown. I must sugar my hair. As a duck with its eyelids, so he with his nose trims his belt and his buttons and turns out his toes." "That's a different from what I used to say when I was a child," said the Gryphon. "Well, I never heard it before," said the Mock Turtle, "but it sounds uncommon nonsense." Alice said nothing. She had sat down again with her face in her hands, wondering if anything would ever happen in a natural way again. "I should like to have it explained," said the Mock Turtle. "She can't explain it," said the Gryphon hastily. "Go on with the next verse." "But about his toes," the Mock Turtle persisted, "how could he turn them out with his nose, you know?" "It's the first position in dancing," Alice said. But she was dreadfully puzzled by the whole thing and longed to change the subject. "Go on with the next verse," the Gryphon repeated impatiently. "It begins, 'I passed by in the garden.'" Alice did not dare to disobey, though she felt sure it would all come wrong, and she went on in a trembling voice. "I passed by his garden and marked with one eye how the owl and the oyster were sharing a pie." "What is the use of repeating all that stuff?" the Mock Turtle interrupted. "If you don't explain it as you go on, it's by far the most confusing thing I ever heard." "Yes, I think you better leave off," said the Gryphon, and Alice was only too glad to do so. "Shall we try another figure of the lobster quadrille?" the Gryphon went on. "Or would you like the Mock Turtle to sing you a song?" "Oh, a song, please, if the Mock Turtle would be so kind," Alice replied, so eagerly that the Gryphon said, in a rather offended tone, "Hm. No accounting for tastes. Sing her turtle soup, will you, old fellow?" The Mock Turtle sighed deeply and began in a voice sometimes choked with sobs to sing this. "Beautiful soup so rich and green, waiting in a hot tureen. Who for such dainties would not stoop? Soup of the evening, beautiful soup. Soup of the evening, beautiful soup. Beautiful soup. Beautiful soup. Soup of the evening. Beautiful, beautiful soup. Beautiful soup, who cares for fish, game, or any other dish? Who would not give all else for two?" pennyworth only of beautiful soup, pennyworth only of beautiful soup, beautiful soup, beautiful soup, soup of the evening, beautiful, beautiful soup. "Chorus again," cried the Gryphon, and the Mock Turtle had just begun to repeat it when a cry of "The trial's beginning" was heard in the distance. "Come on," cried the Gryphon, and taking Alice by the hand, it hurried off without waiting for the end of the song. "What trial is it?" Alice panted as she ran, but the Gryphon only answered, "Come on," and ran faster, while more and more faintly came, carried on the breeze that followed them, the melancholy words, "Soup of the evening, beautiful, beautiful soup." Chapter 11. Who stole the tarts? The King and Queen of Hearts were seated on their throne when they arrived with a great crowd assembled about them, all sorts of little birds and beasts, as well as the whole pack of cards. The knave was standing before them in chains, with a soldier on each side to guard him, and near the King was the White Rabbit, with a trumpet in one hand and a scroll of parchment in the other. In the very middle of the court was a table with a large dish of tarts upon it. They looked so good that it made Alice quite hungry to look at them. "I wish they'd get the trial done," she thought, "and hand around the refreshments." But there seemed to be no chance of this, so she began looking at everything about her to pass away the time. Alice had never been in a court of justice before, but she had read about them in books, and she was quite pleased to find that she knew the name of nearly everything there. "That's the judge," she said to herself, "because of his great wig." The judge, by the way, was the King, and as he wore his crown over the wig, look at the front piece if you want to see how he did it. He did not look at all comfortable, and it was certainly not becoming. "And that's the jury box," thought Alice. "And those 12 creatures," she was obliged to say creatures, you see, because some of them were animals and some were birds. "I suppose they are the jurors." She said this last word 2 or 3 times over to herself, being rather proud of it, for she thought, and rightly too, that very few little girls of her age knew the meaning of it all. However, jurymen would have done just as well. The 12 jurors were all writing very busily on slates. "What are they doing?" Alice whispered to the Gryphon. "They can't have anything to put down yet before the trial's begun." "They're putting down their names," the Gryphon whispered in reply, "for fear they should forget them before the end of the trial." "Stupid things," Alice began in a loud, indignant voice, but she stopped herself hastily, for the White Rabbit cried out, "Silence in the court!" And the King put on his spectacles and looked anxiously around to make out who was talking. Alice could see, as well as if she were looking over their shoulders, that all the jurors were writing down stupid things on their slates, and she could even make out that one of them didn't know how to spell stupid, and that he had to ask his neighbor to tell him. "A nice muddle their slates will be in before the trial's over," thought Alice. One of the jurors had a pencil that squeaked. This, of course, Alice could not stand, and she went round the court and got behind him, and very soon found an opportunity of taking it away. She did it so quickly that the poor little juror, it was Bill the Lizard, could not make out at all what had become of it. So after hunting all about for it, he was obliged to write with one finger for the rest of the day, and this was of very little use, as it left no mark on the slate. "Herald, read the accusations," said the King. On this, the White Rabbit blew 3 blasts of the trumpet, and then unrolled the parchment scroll and read as follows. "The Queen of Hearts, she made some tarts all on a summer day. The Knave of Hearts, he stole those tarts and took them quite away." "Consider your verdict," the King said to the jury. "Not yet, not yet," the Rabbit hastily interrupted. "There's a great deal to come before that." "Call the first witness," said the King, and the White Rabbit blew 3 blasts on the trumpet and called out, "First witness." The first witness was the Hatter. He came in with a teacup in one hand and a piece of bread and butter in the other. "I beg pardon, Your Majesty," he began, "for bringing these in, but I hadn't quite finished my tea when I was sent for." "You ought to have finished," said the King. "When did you begin?" The Hatter looked at the March Hare, who had followed him into the court, arm in arm with the Dormouse. 14th of March, I think it was," he said. 15th, said the March Hare. 16th, added the Dormouse. Write that down, the king said to the jury, and the jury eagerly wrote down all three dates on their slates and then added them up and reduced the answer to shillings and pence. Take off your hat, the king said to the hatter. It isn't mine, said the hatter. Stolen, the king exclaimed, turning to the jury, who instantly made a memorandum of the fact. I keep them to sell, the hatter added as an explanation. I've none of my own. I'm a hatter. Here the queen put on her spectacles and began staring hard at the hatter, who turned pale and fidgeted. Give your evidence, said the king, and don't be nervous, or I'll have you executed on the spot. This did not seem to encourage the witness at all. He kept shifting from one foot to the other, looking uneasily at the queen, and in his confession he bit a large piece out of his teacup instead of the bread and butter. Just at that moment, Alice felt a very curious sensation, which puzzled her a good deal until she made out what it was. She was beginning to grow larger again, and she thought at first she would get up and leave the court. But on second thoughts, she decided to remain where she was as long as there was room for her. I wish you wouldn't squeeze us so, said the Dormouse, who was sitting next to her. I can hardly breathe. I can't help it, said Alice very meekly. I'm growing. You've no right to grow here, said the Dormouse. Don't talk nonsense, said Alice more boldly. You know you're growing too. Yes, but I grow at a reasonable pace, said the Dormouse, not in that ridiculous fashion. And he got up very sulkily and crossed over to the other side of the court. All this time, the queen had never left off staring at the hatter. And just as the Dormouse crossed the court, she said to one of the officers of the court, Bring me the list of the singers in the last concert, on which the wretched hatter trembled so that he shook both of his shoes off. Give your evidence, the king repeated angrily, or I'll have you executed, whether you're nervous or not. I'm a poor man, your majesty, the hatter began in a trembling voice, and I hadn't but just begun my tea, not above a week or so, and what with the bread and butter getting so thin, and the twinkling of the tea... The twinkling of the what? Said the king. It began with a T, the hatter replied. Of course twinkling begins with a T, said the king sharply. Do you take me for a dunce? Go on. I am a poor man, the hatter went on, and most things twinkled after that. Only the March Hare said. I didn't, the March Hare interrupted in a great hurry. You did, said the hatter. I deny it, said the March Hare. He denies it, said the king. Leave out that part. Well, at any rate, the Dormouse said. The Hatter went on, looking anxiously round to see if he would deny it too, but the Dormouse denied nothing, being fast asleep. After that, continued the Hatter, I cut some more bread and butter. But what did the Dormouse say? One of the jurors asked. That I can't remember, said the Hatter. You must remember, remarked the king, or I'll have you executed. The miserable Hatter dropped his teacup and bread and butter and went down on one knee. I'm a poor man, Your Majesty, he began. For the rest of the story, check in with us next week on KRBD.